This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Satish Gupta is a celebrated artist from India who's known for his monumental sculptures that incorporate elements of Indian culture, mysticism, and Zen principles. He's been shown all over the world, and back home in India, his works are on display at quite a number of places, perhaps the ones that the most of us outside of India would have seen. One is the New Delhi International Airport, another is at the Bengaluru Airport. Satish is showing his work for the first time in Kuala Lumpur at an exhibition called Zen Whispers at the Sutra Gallery from the 24th to the 30th of November. And he's here with me today. How are you, Satish?
Very well, Sharmila. Thank you for having me here.
You know, your sculptures are perhaps the most visible of your works, you know, partly just because of the sheer scale of them, and also because they are in quite a number of public spaces around India. But you do many things when it comes to art. You know, you're a painter, you're a muralist, you're a calligrapher, you're a ceramicist, not to mention you're also a writer and a poet. How would you describe the work you do?
I think my work is about being in the moment and really being one with the environment, with everything around us, and just experiencing the sheer joy of being alive. That's what my work is about.
And in terms of the approach or the technique, how do you decide, or how does it come to you? Oh, now I want to make a sculpture. Now I want to paint a mural.
I'm too impatient. That's one of my failings. And my mind is creating all the time. So if I'm in a plane, I grab a piece of paper and something comes to my mind, I write it. Or if I'm traveling, my, you know, instant reaction or instant response, not a reaction, but a response to what's going on around me, that I jot down immediately. So that's where the most of my haikus and my things come from that. But sculptures take a long time. And some of my sculptures take almost 2 years to create one piece. Some of them are really, really large. They're about 23 feet by 23 feet, and some are even larger. So that takes a long, long time, very patiently working on that. And I have lots of pauses in between, because when I'm reflecting and I'm, by the sheer scale of it, I have to wait and to see. And I have a team of helpers, craftspeople who work with me. So it's a very interactive kind of a situation. And in between, when I feel the urge to paint, then I paint, you know. So that's how things just flow in and out. It's a very holistic approach to life.
Mm. And as you mentioned, these particularly these sculptures, they are really sort of large pieces of work. Do you have a very concrete idea of what it's going to be from the get-go, or is it something that evolves as you work on them?
Not at all. I don't even have a sketch. So I start doing these sort of the armature, and that's where I think the 90% of the work, I wouldn't say not 90%, but perhaps surely about 70-80% is in the way I mold that would be just the structure and how the form takes place. And that, I think that is in my mind, and I just work on that and then take it from there and develop it further.
And what about in terms of the themes or the images that you depict? I mean, the one in the Delhi airport, for instance, is Surya, the sun god of the Hindu mythology. You also work a lot with images of the Buddha, and certainly other icons from the Hindu Buddhist philosophy or mythology. You know, there's the goddess, there's Vishnu, Garuda, for instance. How do these ideas or these images come to you?
Well, one of my largest sculptures, which is called the Buddha's Within, and that is at the museum in Mumbai, and the Prince of Wales Museum in Mumbai. And that came out of a very, very intense experience that I had in Sri Lanka at the time of the tsunami. I was practically saved from being washed away because by sheer fate. And I was to be in a hotel which was washed away. But it happened that I was in another place. I was in Dambulla Caves in the presence of Buddha. So it took me, and lots of people, I've for a long time I felt almost guilty that somebody else went in my place, you know. I had to be there, but I was saved by Buddha's grace. So it took me 8 years to come to terms with that, and I developed this idea in my mind over a long, long time. So that's my homage to all the lives lost, and also the grace of Buddha, and the permanence and the impermanence of life. You know, that's what it's all about.
So it sounds like it's a fairly intuitive process for you to go from idea to the actual creation of the art itself.
Yes, I think I start off with a sort of a general idea of what I'm going to do, and then the work takes over. I think some of these, especially how I started on the large ones, there's the image of Shiva, and it's Buddha Shiva. Some people even call it Buddha, but it's Shiva. And I started working on it, and I worked for about 6 months, and then I go from the top of the head just the head of Shiva. It's not the whole body. And I came to the eyes when I start putting the square pieces that I have to sort of the skin of the thing. And it started smiling. And from that, with the eyes, I hadn't done the lips and the thing, because normally people feel only the lips where the smile is, but it's over the whole face. And from that point on, it really was self-created. So this is a Swayambhu, which is something that's created by itself. Mm. I just became an instrument in doing that. I was blessed to have that gift to be able to bring it to life.
Have you always been driven by these spiritual ideas and these sort of Zen, you know, the Zen sort of aspect of life is something that you draw on very strongly? Is that something that's always been of interest to you?
Yes, well, it started when I was in Paris on a scholarship studying art. And I'm very, very fond of books, and I missed that. I was on a scholarship, and I missed being surrounded by books and things. So I was walking down the Seine, and I came across a secondhand bookshop, and I dared to walk in, and I picked up my first book on Zen, which was Zen Flesh, Zen Bones by Paul Reps. It transformed my life. It was, it answered so many questions that my young mind was posing, but it posed so many more questions. Mm-hmm. And all these years I've been going through all this, till now I find that the questions themselves are the answers. Mm-hmm. So it's taken me a whole decades to come to this understanding that the questions are the answers, and that's what life is about.
How long ago was this experience?
This was almost about 40 years back.
And how long have you been an artist? How long would you consider yourself as being an artist?
Well, from that point on, I think when I lost my father at the age of 4 and a half in a plane crash, and I had many siblings, and my mother didn't have the enough time to look after me personally. So I started, art became like an anchor. It became a source of strength, and I won an international prize at 5 or something. That set me off on this. And then I had dreams of all the impressionists. I learned French. I got myself a scholarship. I went to France, and that's how life took over.
Oh, so you must have been very young when you went to France.
I was 20.
Was that the first time you went out of the country?
That was the first time I took a flight.
And so, you know, this was sort of the initial impression of, or initial founding of your art in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I know that you started off as a landscape painter. Mm-hmm. How did you move on from, you know, landscapes to something more, in some ways, I suppose, more abstract, but definitely something, I suppose, with more layers and more depth?
I started off as a landscape painter, seascapes, landscape, but my work is very very eclectical, and also it moves in a kind of a spiral, and I come back to something that, like the elements, is a recurring motif in my work. The moon, the things keep coming back in different forms as you go along. And as they say in Zen, when you're going through, when you're a novice, a mountain is a mountain, a tree is a tree, a river is a river. But when you're going through the process, the mountain is not a mountain. Mm. It becomes, you know, a tree and the same thing. And then you've gone through the experience, a mountain is just a mountain, a river is. So that's where I now find myself, at a point where I can retrospectively look at my work and draw inspiration from them. And now what I'm doing is I'm even incorporating some of the very old works, which I did about 20, 25, 30 years back, into sort of giving them new life with working on them again to make a new, fresh work.
Well, we need to take a break now. But when we come back, we'll speak more to Satish Gupta, who's an artist from India, particularly about what we can expect from his first exhibition in Kuala Lumpur. Zen Whispers is on at the Sutra Gallery from the 24th to the 30th of November. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Indian artist Satish Gupta, whose exhibition Zen Whispers is on at the Sutra Gallery from the 24th to the 30th of November. So Satish, before the break, you were telling us a little bit about your beginnings of your journey to becoming an artist. How did you come to making these sculptures that you're so well known for?
Well, I would really say that I'm an accidental sculpture, and literally and metaphorically, because I was not never trained, even in college, I never really studied sculpture. But I have a feeling for space and for volume and that kind of a training I had. But I broke my arm, and they couldn't fix it, and twice or thrice they had to sort of, and then put a rod in my arm. I was through a lot of pain, and I couldn't paint for a long time, and I was really frustrated by not being able to paint. So I went with my car, with my driver, who was driving me to my studio one day. I said, I have to go and paint, and I have to do something creative. And on the way, I came across a group of nomads who are ironsmiths. And they're from the state of, they're traveling all the time from Rajasthan, from Gujarat. And they had very colorful dresses, and they were very exotic looking. So I jumped out of the car and I went up to them. And they were actually welding on the street. And so I picked up some nails and some sort of copper and iron lamps, oil lamps that they were making. And I created a flower out of that. And that was the beginning of my whole journey as a sculptor. And then soon after that, I got a commission to do a very large sculpture. In fact, a group of five sculptures, which are on the elements, and they're about 23 feet high. And I wasn't a sculptor. So I took the challenge, and I started creating something. And I did the first sculpture on the element of the air, and I created it the traditional way. It was all done in plaster and mud, and the collectors came to see that I hadn't done any drawings of things. I just made that. It took me a long time to do that. And they came and they loved the work, and was going next day for casting. And it so happened that my studio was being constructed at that time, and it had many workers. And to create the volume, or to see, because it was going to be a group of five sculptures, so I had made sort of boxes out of plywood, mm-hmm. which was stacked up one on top of the other to see the volume. And I told the guardian at the studio, I said, the painters were coming to paint the gallery space, my studio space. I said, throw those out and, you know, let the painters come in. And there was only one room in which that particular sculpture was kept. And these guys, the masons and all, they opened that room and they broke that sculpture.
Oh, dear.
So they were dancing on the stage with somebody with a head, somebody with an arm. It was like so surrealistic. And it just 1.5 years of work was just gone into smithereens.
Goodness.
And I didn't know what to do. I was just like totally, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And I called my wife. I said, this is what has happened. But then I calmed down and I told my collector, said, actually, I didn't really like that work, you know. Can I do something on the spot? I like to do it in the place. And I didn't know what I was going to do. So they were very generous and they said, okay, you come to the... And there at the... this is 40 cubic feet of square space there. And I saw a terracotta pot at the end of the atrium space. And I saw that, and sheer frustration, it started drizzling. Sheer frustration, I had a newspaper with me. I tore that up, and I went up to the terracotta, to keep ward off the evil eye, and they had this sculpture on the... And I took a little mud from the floor, and I pasted this little piece of square on that. And that was how my technique was born. So an accident turned into something... really opened a whole new world for me.
Right. And do you still sort of draw on that now to
I really think, you know, if you're open to the universe, you let things, so many wonderful things come up. You know? And that's what my whole philosophy on Zen is. And that's what I'm playing in the show at Sutra. Mm-hmm. These are scrolls that I have done, which I'm going to be showing there.
So the show at Sutra is actually a sort of curtain raiser to set the stage for hopefully a larger show by you in Malaysia, right?
That's right. And that I'm hoping to bring some actual sculptures and some something substantial to them.
Right, because your work requires, I suppose to bring your work over requires a fair amount space, planning and...
Yeah, it would take a lot. To also, I have to find people who would be interested in seeing my work, and I just did a lot of my work is calligraphic, as you would see in the show, which is basically calligraphic work, and I just completed the perhaps the longest painting in the world.
This is in Puducherry in India.
In Puducherry. Yeah. It's 1.6 kilometer long.
Right.
It was a tremendous experience just creating that.
How long did it take you?
Well, we started, I thought it would take about 12 hours to do. But we had a whole lot of dances. It was on the elements. And to bring awareness about the elements and the preservation, conservation of the environment. And we had, it was a very long canvas that was specially created for this. And the dancers were going to dance on different elements at different, along the way.
While the painting was going on.
And they started dancing faster, much faster than anticipated. So I had my 5 kilogram brush and I was painting along with that, with the music and the dancers, it was incredible. So we, instead of 12 hours, we finished in about 4 hours something.
Wow.
And by the end of it, I was ready to drop dead.
So what else will we see in the Zen Whispers exhibition? So there are scrolls, which is your calligraphic work.
Yes.
And what else will there be?
Well, we're going to launch this book, which is called Zen Whispers. Mm-hmm. And it's about my writing and about some of my haikus, my experiences in life, and sort of revelations and insights that are all in this book. So we'll be going to launch that.
In terms of the, your works, whether your murals or your sculptures, there are a lot of influences that, to me, having been born and brought up in Southeast Asia, the influences seem like something that I've seen even in this part of the world, you know, mm-hmm. in many of our ancient temples, and also, of course, from various sort of different time periods in India itself.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you, do you do research? What is your method of working on
this? I do a lot of research. I go very deeply into the subject. For example, my Garuda sculpture is also in Indonesia.
Yes.
And this part of the world, it started off when I got this commission to do this large, very large work of Garuda with Vishnu and Lakshmi riding on his back. I was, in fact, at that time in one of the wildlife places, and I was overlooking a gorge, and there was this eagle flying, and at that time I got the call to create something for this space. And there was this eagle flying, and it was sunset, and the light reflecting on it was almost golden. So I imagined him as Garuda, and that's what I proposed to these people. And then I did, I studied the anatomy of the wing and the flight, and I enjoy flight very much. And so I really went into the depths of understanding what it was all about and what Garuda's spirit is, and how he's a demigod who wanted to remain a demigod. So that was a very beautiful thing. And this is a 2.5-ton sculpture hanging from the atrium space from the fifth floor. It's just suspended, and it's...
I've seen pictures, but I'm sure that in person it must be quite marvelous.
It was a very, very interesting experience, because I went through a whole process. The brief was that the more interesting thing had to be on top, because it's, the CEO was sitting on the top floor, and then it went down. So I proposed a column on which Garuda was going to be. And then halfway through the thing, there was, about Vastu. Vastu is the sort of feng shui.
Feng shui of Indian culture.
Of India.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people get into these large works, and everybody has a say. So he said, I had the Garuda on the column, and he was flying upwards to the sky. And he said, no, it's bad feng shui and bad vastu, and all the wealth will fly out of the...
I see.
So he put fear in the client's mind.
Yeah.
And they said, can you do something else? I said, I can't think of anything else at this point. And I'm like, the concept is very clear, and I've already started working on it. So don't worry, I'll think of something else. So I removed the column.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspended the Garuda, and now he's flying in. So I said, all wealth,
the wealth is flying in.
Goodness and honor and will fly into the place.
Right.
So I just turned it around. So I think whenever I come up with an adversity and another thing, instead of panicking, I think the wiser thing to do is to adapt and to see how that offers an opportunity to create something new.
Because your works are not overtly inspired by contemporary concerns, or do you see your works in do you see yourself as representing the realities of India today in your work?
The work you're talking about is my past work, but what is happening now is something totally, because I evolve all the time, and I'm doing like the, I'm now from the Garuda, I've done this sculpture, this which is called Wings of Eternity, which is just the wing. So it's very, very contemporary in that sense. It's just about flight and about. Then there's another sculpture, which is Icarus, and it's a suspended work, and the fall, over ambition and the fall. Sure. So all that is happening. Then I have the cosmic wave, which is just a wave.
Yeah.
So, so many, many things are happening in the work now.
And as an artist that's working in a country like India, which is, especially in this moment in time, sort of really rapidly progressing and going through so many changes, are you inspired or driven to sort of incorporate some of this into your work?
Yes, of course. But I think my concern is more global. And more, I think the biggest challenge now is climate change. And I think that is where we really need to address, and we have to see what we can do about and whatever. So I was last month or a month and a half back, I was in Normandy, and I was at the beach where Monet and Delacroix painted their very famous works. And I was at a peace conference precisely on this thing. And I went to paint there. I took my canvases, and there was a friend who drove me there. And I laid it out, and I was just going to paint when there was a huge, big storm. It was almost like a tsunami coming there. And my friend, I was looking at the seascape, and I was just drawing, making quick drawings. There was no possibility of painting at that time. I was doing very quick drawings. And I saw my friend, he'd gone, and he was sitting on the beach, calmly meditating. And that was incredible. That just brought a whole new set of works, which is I'm going to be showing in January in Delhi, which... It's like the storm was like a metaphor for what is happening in the world now. It's all chaotic, all kinds of things are very rapidly changing. So many things are going to be, will be just overwhelmed with the kind of change that is happening. And it's quantum. No, it's not just happening. So that, I think I took that as a metaphor, the storm, and the storm is within, basically. We have to tackle all kinds of things in ourselves, and then we see outside. So it's the roaring sea and the silent mind. Mm. And I feel that each one of us is responsible for doing whatever we can in a little way to address that, to...
And are these also larger-than-life sort
of
sculptures?
Yeah, these are going to be, some of these canvases are very large.
Ah, so these are canvases.
These are canvases, yeah. But also sculptures are coming along.
So what draws you to this this approach to wanting to make these huge pieces of work?
I think I was told I was a megalomaniac. No, I think what interests me is... I've done some very small pieces as well, you know, so it's not only that I make large. Largeness by itself is nothing. I mean, now we have made a big sculpture in India, somebody will make a bigger one and
yes.
a bigger one.
Yes.
So the scale by itself is meaningless, you know, even though I painted I painted this canvas, which is 1.6 kilometers long, which is perhaps the longest in the world, but that doesn't mean anything to me. I think it's what it is saying and what it is about. And the scale is so relative. You know, a tiny sculpture can be immense and a huge sculpture can be...
Absolutely.
So that itself is nothing. But I think what I enjoy most is surrounding people with my work. Let them be part of that thing, you know. Like my Buddha's within sculpture... it's like a cave.
Ah, yes. So it's, yes. Again, I've seen pictures. It looks stunning.
It's like a cave. So maybe like 20 people can fit into it. If you pack them up, you know, they can fit into this. So So that is something that really interests me. It's almost like being in a womb, you know. So you get that kind of a... Yes.
Well, thank you very much. I really hope that we get to see your works in Malaysia soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharmila.
I've been speaking to artist Satish Gupta, who is showing his works in Kuala Lumpur for the first time at an exhibition called Zen Whispers, which is showing at the Sutra Gallery from the 24th to the 30th of November. He also launched over the weekend his book called Zen Whispers as well. For more information, visit sutrafoundation.org.my. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.